This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
NBA Finals going on right now while we're getting ready for the 2025-2026 season to talk about it all. And whether or not Darius Garland needs to go, Tim Bontemps is going to join us right now. ESPN NBA senior writer. Find him on Twitter at Tim Bontemps. He's on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Tim, thanks for joining us this morning.
Hello, guys. How you doing?
First, thank you very much for the time. We know that you're traveling right now, so we do appreciate the time here, Tim. I want to start off with the Cavs first. Do you think that to get to the NBA Finals in 2026, that Darius Garland has to be removed from the equation for the Cavaliers?
No, I don't think he has to be. I think the Cavs have to become a more capable team defensively on the perimeter, which doesn't mean they have to get rid of him, but they do need to upgrade in terms of the guys who can defend on the perimeter. Because I think when you saw the way Indiana attacked them in that second round series, that was a question I had about this team all the way through. It was a problem that came up in that series. Now, look, Darius Garland was not really healthy at any point in that series. I'm sure Cavs would argue that if he was healthy, they could potentially outscore the Pacers in the series, and they might be able to. I mean, the Cavs had an unbelievable offensive team all season long. But I think when you look at how the Pacers went through the East, and I think right now you have to assume the Pacers are the team that should deserve to be looked at as the favorites to get out of the East next year. The thing that they have successfully done against every team they've played other than the Thunder, who don't have any defensive weaknesses, is exploited the defensive weaknesses of the matchup that's put in front of them. And so if you're the Cavs, you have to know if you're going into a series with the Pacers, they're going to stress test your defense, and you have to be able to make up for that. And, you know, whether Darius Garland's on the team or not, or, you know, anybody's on the team or not, that's the question you have to answer, is what are you going to do to negate the way the Pacers have been able to pick at a scab for whoever team, whatever team they've played throughout these last couple of playoffs.
I mean, Tim, part of what I have tried to argue on why it might make sense to trade Darius is that the defense aside, and you just brought that up, of having that small backcourt, that combo is something that makes them vulnerable. But also, look at Evan Mobley and his trajectory as the unicorn that I think the Cavs organization thinks he could be. His usage rate is so low compared to guys that are supposed to be at the level that I think they think he's at. So effectively, he doesn't have the ball in his hands. And is he ever going to have the ball in his hands enough to make a difference when he's playing with two talented guards?
I mean, I don't think the argument to trade a guy is that we have too many good offensive players. That I think the argument should be, if you want to have Anobi have the ball more, find ways to have him have the ball more, right? So I think he took very meaningful strides forward this year offensively. There still is room for him to grow, to become, you know, the player that the Cavs hope he can be, which is a guy who could be a top, you know, truly a top five-ish kind of player in the league, a guy who could be the best player on a team that, in theory, could compete for and win a title. To your point, he's got to have a higher usage rate offensively to get there. I would say he's on a very good path right now. And I wouldn't say that you need to trade. Like I said, I don't think it should be, well, we have this other good offensive player, we should get rid of him and have a worse offensive player so that Evan Mobley can shoot the ball more, have the ball in his hands more. I think it should just be, let's find ways to make sure Evan Mobley has the ball in his hands more, and that will lead to good things for the Cavs.
You know, part of the issue, though, Tim, is that Darius on his contract, he's making, you know, $40 million next year, escalates to 45. He's eligible for an extension. And at the same time, I watched him in that elimination game. He was injured. You said he was injured. And now we found out with the surgery that he has to get, he definitely was injured. So there's no question he has toughness. He played through it. But he also took more shots in that elimination game as somebody that had no burst. His speed was obviously compromised, wasn't the same player. And that's what I'm talking about, that mindset of the two guards monopolizing the basketball in a way that I think could be preventing Evan Mobley from taking that next big step.
I'll just repeat what I said. It doesn't make a lot of sense to just get rid of a good offensive player to have another guy shoot more. So
but
I think
get a better defense, get more length, get more athleticism defensively.
That's a different question.
So how do you get those guys? You have to trade somebody that's worthwhile.
That's not what you just said, though. So what you asked was, do they need to get rid of Darius Garland to have Evan Mobley shoot more? And I think the answer to that is no. I think that just has to be a focus on having Evan Mobley shoot more. I think those are two entirely different questions. If you want to argue the Cavs won't be good enough defensively if they have two small guards, that's one thing. Both the questions were, Evan Mobley needs to shoot more, Darius Garland shooting too much. I don't think getting rid of Darius Garland to make Evan Mobley shoot more in a vacuum is the right way to look at it. That's all.
Is it the right way to look at it that you might have to trade Darius, because he has trade value, to actually get the length and athleticism that they so desperately need, that it was so eye-openly obvious that they didn't have in that series against the Pacers?
Here's what I would say. There are a lot of point guards in the league, and there's a lot of centers in the league. And so if you're trying to trade for wings, or defensive length on the wing, which is what you're talking about, mm-hmm. You're probably not trading for value if you're trading a point guard. So I think part of the thing about the way the Cavs are built is that, you know, you could argue they have two point guards and two centers. Now, Evan Mobley is kind of a combo big. Donovan Mitchell's a combo guard, right? But they essentially have two point guards or two, you know, lead guards and two centers. And so if you start talking about, well, what should the Cavs do trade-wise, you're probably not going to get the kind of value back you would think for the players on the team because of the, you know, sort of the positional value of where things are at around the league. Plus, we're also spent a few minutes talking about trading a guy who just had surgery on his big toe and is going to be out for a few months, right? So I would say that from an abstract value standpoint, if you're trying to trade Darius Garland today, his value probably isn't what it could be. So I would say the Cavs just won 64 games, had one of the best seasons in the history of the franchise. They lost in the second round to what is a very good Pacers team. And one of their better players was compromised the whole series in Darius Garland. And so I would say, I think a reasonable thing to do is to try to upgrade on the margins, run it back next year, see how the team looks, and then go from there. Because I mean, it's not like this is not like the Lakers with LeBron James at 40 and you've got one last gasp at breaking through. I mean, the Cavs, all these guys are in their early to mid-20s. And they all are under contract. There's a ton of runway with the team. So I don't think this should be a massive panic situation. But, you know, it does bring up some interesting questions the way their season ended about how you should approach the summer and how you should approach next season. You know, but I also don't think that this is the moment where it makes a lot of sense to completely alter where the team is at based off of, you know, the circumstances that surrounded the way their season ended.
Tim Bontemps joining us on the show. Tim, for the record, I completely agree with you. I was going to ask you about Jared Allen, but I kind of want to go to something else because I'm very risk adverse here. And I want to know if you feel the same way because, you know, we watched Golden State. I think a lot of teams tried to make themselves better to catch up with Golden State and ended up spiking their own chances for whatever reason in trades. And I do think that it's, yeah, the second apron is scary, but it's also maybe the best practice to go forward because I think that you're stuck. And it feels to me, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Like, why would I trade away Darius Garland, great player, two-time All-Star, for guys who are on the margin? It feels like we're going to get hosed here.
Well, I mean, look, if you're going to make, it's very hard. I don't really live in, and this is not a comment towards you guys whatsoever, but I don't live, if you read our site, ESPN.com, I don't write out fake trade proposals, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and the reason I do that or don't do that is it's very hard in a vacuum to talk about, like, hypothetical trades, right? Like, if you could turn Darius Garland into some awesome trade for the Cavs, sure. I think that would make sense to do. I would say that for just about anybody on every team, right? But there are a lot of extenuating circumstances here between the season the Cavs had last year, his current injury, and the lack of need around the league for point guards on most teams, because it's probably the deepest position in the league at the moment, that, yeah, like, it's one thing to say the Cavs should, you know, trade Darius Garland and get a bigger wing and, you know, get some more size and more defensive versatility, but this team was also a 64-win team because they had one of the best offenses of all time, and he was a big driver of that. And then they got in the playoffs, and he was hurt. So, you know, I would say that at least for next year, I think it's reasonable to go into the season and say, if our core guys are healthy, we think we can go toe-to-toe with Indiana or anybody else in the East and then see where we stand against this Thunder team that certainly looks like, to me, it's going to be the best team in the league for a while, but we'll see. And I think the better question is, you know, when you mentioned the second apron, do you want to pay Ty Jerome the full mid-level for a few years? Do you want to bring back Sam Merrill for, you know, something approaching $10 million for a few years? Like, I think for this Cavs team, the questions are going to be more around those supporting pieces and how they fit and who should those pieces be and what should they do, rather than what are you going to do with the top four guys on the roster for a whole host of reasons. But I think the biggest one being they won 64 games last year and have a heck of a team.
Final one here, NBA Finals, Game 3 coming up tomorrow. Did Oklahoma City unlock Indiana, or are they on their way to a title?
I mean, I would say they shut down Indiana for basically the entire first two games of the series, and the only reason that it's 1-1 is they missed some shots in the second half of Game 1, and they couldn't convert a single basket off turnovers basically the entirety of Game 1, and Tyrese Haliburton made a great play. But, you know, Haliburton thrives on taking advantage of soft spots in the defense. The Thunder don't have any. The Thunder have the best player in the series by a significant margin. The Thunder can play virtually any style, both ends of the court. They were a 68-win team, had a historic point differential, I think are an all-time great team, and you know, to me, they have only through the first two games, despite the fact that it's 1-1, they certainly look like the team that I think should win in five games. Now, they do tend to have ruts offensively. We saw that in Game 1. It'll be interesting to see tomorrow in Game 3 if the Pacers can hit shots at home. They've shot the lights out, as you guys well know, throughout the playoffs. Andrew Nembhard has shot, you know, 48% from three or something. He shot 29% in the regular season. So, you know, we'll see how these games in Indy go. But, yeah, look, I thought the Thunder were the best team all season. I thought the only team that really could beat him in a series is either Denver with Jokic, who almost did, or Boston. Obviously, Boston isn't there. And so I think sometime in the next week to 10 days, we're going to see the Thunder win the title.
Tim Bontemps, ESPN. Find him on Twitter at Tim Bontemps. Tim, thank you very much for the time. Safe travels to you.
Anytime, guys. Talk to you soon.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Service is not available in all areas.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. And let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
He's Jeff Phelps. I'm Andy Baskin.
Yes, we are.
I still want to kind of go on a little bit more about this surgery that Darius Garland had on his great toe. Months. How's that say? Is that a fair assessment? He'll be back. They're saying that he'll probably be back for training
camp. Some period of time.
Yeah, but it's not. And it's not like a 1 week thing or a month thing. It's a couple months.
Their math doesn't add up.
To rehab that. That's okay.
No, that's okay. Yeah.
I mean, when they went to work today, they said there'd be no math.
Hopefully he's back for the start of the regular season or the beginning of training camp. That'd be great. We sure hope so.
Jeff, if they get rid of Darius Garland, are they a better team if they trade him?
Oh, no. See, that's not the way to put it.
Okay. How should I
put it?
It's
not
Jeff?
Getting rid of. Why would you get rid of Darius Garland?
Because you think you have. You know? You have too much. You have redundant capabilities at the guard spots.
Well, you've had that for 3 years.
Well,
hasn't seemed to bother him very much.
And they had an outstanding regular season.
Yes. And 2 years in a row, you've not been knocked out of the second round of the playoffs. You don't overreact here, and you're going to find this funny coming from me. The last thing you do is bust it up to bust it up. That would be silly. I mean, you don't need to trade Darius Garland. Do you need to add other players to this team who might have different skill sets and might make the team better all the way around because it's a better mix? Yes, that would be great. Now, how do you do that? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not there is no reason to, as I hear a lot of people say, trade Darius Garland. No, Darius is a really good NBA player. I caught grief when he was a rookie
and he was off to a slow start because I said, just stay with him. He'll be just fine. Well, he's better than just fine. But man, people wanted that kid run out of town. Don't run him out of town now. But he's clearly the obvious and best trade piece if you're looking to change the way this team is constructed. And I think changing the way this team is constructed is a really good idea. I've said it too many times. I'm tired of hearing myself say it. But okay. I've been saying it for 3 years. I'll say it one more time. Two ball dominant guards. Small. Not the way to win an NBA title. Well, maybe they can pull it off. Good luck to them.
All right. So Chris Fedor was on over the weekend. Dan, what do you have to say?
Well, he was asked about Garland and maybe how this team can improve. And especially more than anything, what about Darius Garland makes people want to trade him?
For all of the greatness that he brings on the offensive end of the floor, he is a complete and utter defensive liability. So there's enough evidence here that tells you that every single time the Cavs get into a seven-game series, the opponent that's playing against the Cavs are going to target him relentlessly over and over and over again. But when you get further and further in the playoffs and your margin for error starts to shrink and little things become the difference between winning a series and losing a series, that's something that you have to consider. How many targetable players are you going to survive with on the defensive end of the floor? And if he's going to be that level of defender, guys, he's going to have to be all-time transcendent on the offensive end to make up for that. I'm talking Steph Curry levels. I'm talking Damian Lillard levels. And I don't know that Darius can be that type of player in a playoff environment.
Chris Fedor was on with Spencer German and Earl the Pearl over the weekend. And I
agree with him. He's not a good defensive player. Everybody's been trying to sugarcoat that fact for a long time. And yet everybody says, no, Jared Allen's a problem. Good look. Take a good look at the defense. If Darius is here and Jared isn't, unless you get somebody, you know, who's an even better defensive player than Jared to play alongside Evan Mobley.
And then his name comes up in trade rumors too all the time too.
Jared?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when your team finishes in the same spot, Andy, 2 years in a row, and again, they had a wonderful regular season, man. They were great. Really fun to watch. But when you finish in the same spot 2 seasons in a row, and you fire a very competent head coach because you're not happy that you finished out of the second round, and you bring in another very competent head coach, and you get knocked out in the same spot with a different emphasis, emphasizing offense over defense. Coaches won't tell you that, but that's clearly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And you're in the same spot. Well, what's next? It's not J.B. Bickerstaff's fault. It's not Kenny Atkinson's fault. I've been saying for some time, it's the roster construction. It's a really good roster, but maybe it's not the perfect fit. Maybe that's why
you're in the playoffs.
Yeah, which is what matters. I mean, you don't get a prize for winning most games in the regular season.
You should. NHL gives you one.
All right, good. Go ahead. Create one.
I can't believe they haven't come out with a trophy for that.
Okay. We're very happy here after game 82 to have won the Baskin. Thank you very much.
I'd be okay with that. Best in mediocrity because you didn't win a championship.
We've won the Baskin.
Well, Chris had one more thing to say involving possibly a solution.
Given his limitations, given how they want to play, and given their salary cap situation, I think he would be the one to solve a lot of their problems if they get the kind of offer that we could all agree would make them a better team and closer to a championship. And the idea behind it is you take one high-priced player and you try to turn him into three playable guys or two playable guys.
And maybe a draft choice, which you don't have.
Does that make you better? He's not talking about superstars. He's talking about playable guys, Jeff. Guys. Just regular run-of-the-mill, really, really good basketball players that aren't going to...
And you know what, Andy? If it's the right trade, yes, it makes you better. Why does it do that? Let me just throw two guys at you. Did anybody really know anything about Aaron Nesmith and Andrew Nembhard before Indiana started kicking the you-know-what out of people in the playoffs?
No.
Guess what they are?
Regular everyday guys.
But good basketball players.
Yeah.
Good basketball players. If the Cavs could turn Darius into another big and a guy out on the wing or a 6'5" point guard, you know, think Tyrese Halliburton.
Mm-hmm.
The name Jalen Suggs out of Orlando keeps getting thrown around.
Yeah,
and Jalen's a former football player and good defensive player and scores enough and facilitates enough. You know, take a look at Orlando. Orlando has the assets to make you think, that's interesting. And that's a team that you could trade with. And then if you're Orlando, you put Darius next to Banchero and Franz Wagner. I would think they'd like that a lot.
What are we getting back out of that?
I don't know. The rumor you've heard is Jalen Suggs and...
All right. And?
Another player. Pick.
Jamin,
you might not be have your socks knocked off by what the return might be on paper, but on the floor might be a very different look.
Are you saying freedom on the floor and maybe freedom salary cap wise? A little.
I'm talking just play. I'm not even thinking salary cap. But the minute, if Darius isn't here, who becomes your number two or number 1A scoring option?
Evan?
Thank you. What does that do for your team in theory?
Well, as many people have said, this team goes as Evan goes.
Will go when Evan goes.
Yeah.
I think it, if you get the right deal, you don't hesitate. If you don't get the right deal, you don't do it. I mean, it would be silly to give up a player of his caliber just to make a deal.
Jim is in Strongsville. Hello, Jim. How are you today?
Hello, gentlemen. You know what, Jeff? You just hit the nail on the head, buddy. But I think when you're talking about Darius, I love Darius. I have been a proponent of Darius forever. But the one thing that you got to add into the mix here that you have, yes, great flyer. Yes. And then you got the issue with two smaller ball dominant guys. But the third issue that's probably the biggest issue is Darius with his slight frame has been injured every year he's been in the NBA. And I'm sorry, availability is a big deal.
Yep.
What is it now? Two playoff series where he's been hurt. I love the guy. I love his game. I think he might be better with a less ball dominant guard in the backcourt with him. I love the idea of Suggs. And I'll tell you what, Wagner hasn't been the player that they've wanted him to be. I'm just wondering if you could do a package with Jared and Garland and maybe get Wagner back and Suggs. Because I think that would really round out your offense. And I think it would be
You mean Franz Wagner, not Mo, right?
Yeah, I want the good one. I don't want the guy just full space.
I can't see them trading Wagner and Suggs. I think Wagner and Banchero are their future.
He's had two down seasons though, you know, and I know the one year they blamed it kinda on him playing internationally over the summer, but maybe not. Look, if you can pry him out of there, great. But here's the thing. If you put in like a Suggs, I think you're better. I don't want to say addition by subtraction, but I think when you put a guy in there that's a pass first point guard with some size, that does. That kind of unlocks Evan Mobley for more shots. I think that allows more guys more shots. When you've got both Evan and, you know, Mitchell back in the backcourt, that's just so many shots dedicated to two dudes in your backcourt. I just don't know. I just think that the offense would go better because, look, everybody talks about, like, well, they moved the ball, and look what Indiana's doing. Remember, the last 30 or some games of the year, the Cavs didn't move the ball as well as they did. And I know you keep saying, like, well, you can play team ball and win basketball. You know who I compare this Indiana team to? I compare them to the Pistons with Chauncey Billups. You know, yeah, you could do it, but without that super, superstar, I don't think you can do it long term. And while I think Halliburton's a good player, I think he's more like a Chauncey Billups type player. Really good player, hits big shots, but he's not a transcendental player. And I think if you really want to win NBA championships and be consistently in the conversation, you have to have that guy that's transcendental.
Mm. Jim, thank you. Isaac and Shaker writes, hi, Isaac, I got about 30 seconds.
Yeah, here's my 30 seconds. All you guys are wrong. Leave Garland alone. Leave the court four alone. Donovan Mitchell's so tired at the end of the game because your bench is terrible. Your bench is terrible. Wade, Okoro, Murrow can't get their own shot. All these guys that's on these other teams, they can get when Halliburton's on the bench and when SGA's on the bench, they get plenty of rest because guys can get their own shot. They can handle the ball. If anybody was missed during that series was Darius Garland because he tired Donovan Mitchell out because Mitchell has to do so much with the ball. He has to bring it up, has to get other guys involved in the offense. He has to be the score.
And they were both hurt, so, let's be honest. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, but still, the point is, don't trade. You're wrong about Garland.
Well, I didn't say trade him. It's not what we're talking about. It's what everybody else is saying.
He shouldn't even be. He shouldn't even be in the conversation about Trey. These guys have been together 2 or 3 years. Garland is not the problem. Garland can get you 18 to 20.
It's not Darius, Isaac. It's not Darius. It's the fit. People need to understand. There's a big difference. We're not talking about the player. He's a terrific player. It's about the fit with this team. People need to comprehend that fact. Darius is terrific, but does it work here, and will it get them past the second round of the playoffs? That's the conversation.
Isaac, thank you. Mike Exisa, CBS Sports, talking baseball next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
All right, Danny. I don't want to say anything like treated you poorly or anything in this whole experience by the fact that it's been 3.5 hours now and we have not talked a single
thing. I just think you've treated the listeners poorly.
Oh,
is the way you should look at it.
Yeah, that's right. Because these are the takes that you don't have to workshop with people because you feel so strongly about.
Yes.
And they're just that dynamic. Okay. Let's get into it then. I don't know any other way. I'll tell you how I feel about it, but I think that we are very aligned when it comes to what the Cavs should do. But what they should do and what they will do, I feel like, is two different things at this point.
Sure. I think it depends on what you think they should do, obviously. So I think
they should be in the business of trading Darius. I think they should be in the business of trading Jared Allen. But now the further and further we get away from the Darius news and the further and further we get away from the season, I don't think either is going to happen.
So I do not think they should be in the business of trading Darius Garland. And I do not think they will be in that business. I'm with you on Jared Allen. I think he is somebody that they should look to move. I don't know if that is going to happen or not. I think there's a much better chance that he gets traded from things I've heard from reading between the lines. Like, I think there's a better chance that happens than Darius Garland.
The value for Darius is shot relative to what it was, basically what the market has come out and said that he's worth.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think that the Cavs want to trade him. Like, I think that's also part of it. I think that the Cavs would like to see this through with Darius Garland. And if there was a way to, improve the team and get better by trading Darius, I think that the Cavs should entertain it, but I think that there has to be a trade out there that makes them better. And I don't know how many of those exist with Darius Garland, because the Cavs are in a very complicated position financially right now, being in the second apron. And I think it is easier to trade a $20 million player, which Jared Allen is, and get similar value back. And I'm not saying that you have to win that trade the way that I think you would have to win a Darius Garland trade, because he's a 25-year-old two-time All-Star. Jared Allen is not that. He's not a franchise type player. I don't think he should be somebody, as I said on this show on Monday, I don't think he should be somebody that you really truly consider part of this core. He's a very nice role player, and those guys are always expendable. And I think Jared Allen should be. So when you look at that trade, I think it's easier to trade $20 million than it is to trade $39 million, which is what Darius Garland is going to make next year, especially when the value you need to get back for a $20 million player is not nearly what the value you need to get back for Darius Garland is. And I think there are some other on-court things that you need to look at when thinking about trading away Darius too.
All right, what are those on-court things?
So part of the reason why I think the Cavs lost to the Pacers is because they did not have enough guys that could competently dribble under pressure. And Darius Garland was not a very big part of that series. And I think if you watch that series and knowing now what we know about his foot injury, I think a lot more of this stuff makes sense. Like, it's hard for me to look at what he did in those three games against Indy and say, yeah, this guy just can't play in the playoffs. Like, I just don't think that's fair, considering
even though he has not beat the Charges previously of being some sort of, you know, dynamic playoff player. A few years ago in the play-in games, the one he had in the Brooklyn game and the Atlanta game, he looked very good in those games.
Sure, but I think we are basing this based on a series against the New York Knicks 3 years ago.
Because
if you look at last year, he was 20 pounds lighter than he should have been after that jaw injury. Like, he was not the guy.
Well, so, but this is part of the problem.
He was not Darius Garland. Sure, but that's a different conversation than just saying this guy can't play in the playoffs.
He's very injured is the problem we're having, and it's all of the only time that he's healthy in the playoffs is a Knicks series where in game three, when it's tied up at one apiece, he was an absolute no-show, 4-for-21 from the field, didn't score anything. Like, what else am I supposed to base him off?
Sure, but I think it is something, if you're looking at who Darius Garland is now, like, I think he's a better basketball player than he was at that point, and he should be. He's 25 now compared to 22 or 23 at that point, and he's gotten much more experience and is more comfortable in the fit. But I think you look at that series against the Pacers. They needed more guys who could handle the pressure. They needed guys who could, like, the physical actual pressure that the Pacers were putting on the Cavs full court defensively.
Yeah.
Not saying, like, you know, pressure of the playoffs.
I got what you're saying.
Basketball pressure. They needed more shooting, which is something they forgot how to shoot wide open threes in that series. Mm-hmm. Those are two things Darius Garland excels in. The other thing that I look at, too, is Donovan Mitchell has had a lot on his shoulders in the playoffs, and he has been a playoff riser, I think it's fair to say. If you look at what he did, despite the fact that he was playing on one leg, but he's also missed a few games last year because of a lower leg injury. Like, that is something that he, I think he's still in his prime. I think there's a serious case that you could say Donovan Mitchell has been better every year, and there's no reason to think he can't do that next year. But who are you going to find that helps to take that burden off of Donovan Mitchell in the backcourt? Because that is something, if you were to trade Darius Garland away, you have to make sure that you're just as good in that spot.
So that's the hard part for myself, is that, and it feels like this is where we've kind of connected all the dots within the Darius Garland conversation, is that if you're trying to find somebody that's going to make you whole in this trade, it just doesn't seem like it exists out there.
Correct.
Like, it's going to be really hard to have a trade where you're like, whoa, Kobe Altman did it. Like, the piece fits better, and you know that Darius is not the best player in this return. It just doesn't seem like that exists out there.
And it's not even that he can't be the best player in a trade, but there has to be a trade that makes them better, and I have not yet seen one. And we've seen a bunch of fake trades thrown out there from a ton of people on the internet. Right? Like, this happens every day on NBA Twitter for every trade. Like, I have a friend who sent me a three-team trade that sent out Darius Garland and Jared Allen and returned back, and I think Max Strus and Craig Porter Jr.
Was your friend, like, drunk playing NBA 2K?
No, I mean, he sent it. Someone else posted it. Like, he's like, what do you think of this? And it got the Cavs back. Domantas Sabonis.
By the way, I would not be, I don't want to be friends with people that send me NBA trade machines.
I don't want that. About Mac soft launching
it.
Takes.
Mac loves it. Nick loves it. The two of them both love the NBA trade machine. If I got it from a friend in a text, an NBA trade machine, of like, what do you think about this one? I don't know that I might leave the group.
That's part of the job for me, though. That's part of the job. Like, that, I'm going to be the person that these people are going to throw this at, because they're like,
these people.
I'm like, well, yes, that's what my friends will do.
And then you just tear their trade machine request apart.
It's like, you know, Sabonis and Austin Reeves and somebody else. I'm like, this is a terrible idea for the Cavs. Like Domantas Sabonis would be a terrible fit.
With
like
trade
Austin
machines.
Reeves is so worse than Darius Garland. Like
the problem I have with trade machine conversation, and this works across multiple sports, is that no one ever thinks about the other team in this trade. They just always make it about themselves. Right. They always make it about the Cavs winning the trade. They never think, why would the Kings do this? They never think, why would the Timberwolves do this? Like it's never on equal balance. But that's my trade machine thought.
That
that's why I don't
fair.
Like it. But the point is that, and I think you're driving to a good point, and it's something that I think a lot of Cavs fans have come to the realization of, is that in a lot of these trades that anybody can come up with, or anyone you can think of, the Cavs don't end up with the best player coming back. The Cavs are sending the best player. Now, I can argue whether or not Darius, with the injuries he's had in the previous couple years and the struggles he's had the previous couple years, if you're betting on the wrong pony, but it's going to be really hard in that moment for Kobe Altman to say, we made this team instantly better.
Very difficult. I don't know that. I mean, I'm sure there's a trade that exists, but it has to be a trade that makes sense for both sides. And unless there's a team that is willing to overpay for Darius Garland, I don't think that the Cavs should be in the business of just trading away Darius Garland just to trade him away. Because I don't know how many trades are out there that make them better. I don't know what Darius Garland's value is right now on the open market after this foot injury that he's probably going to miss the start of next season, 4 to 5 months. I mean, 4 months is 2 weeks in a training camp. 5 months is 3 weeks into the season. So,
but the Cavs have to do something, though. And I know you mentioned Jared Allen, sure. But they can't just sit on their hands and say, everything's going to be better.
I would agree with that.
They have to do something. So what do they do? Is it attacking part of that 6 through 10 that Atkinson multiple times throughout the postseason said was the best 6 through 10 in the entire NBA? Like, where are you shaking up the snow globe?
I would be shaking up the bench, and I would be trading Jared Allen. Those are the two things that if I were in charge of the Cavs, I would look to do. And I don't know what the return for Jared Allen would look like, but you look at him as somebody that I also think Evan Mobley should play center more frequently next year, and that's the way to do it. It's really difficult to play your best center 25, 30 minutes a night at center when you have another center that's making $20 million on the roster that has also made All-Star games. That's a tough spot to be. So I think that should be part of it, because you think Evan Mobley can get better from this too. Not that Jared's not a very good player. He is. But I think that you want to repurpose some of that money. I think that somebody like Isaac Okoro probably should not be back next year. I think Dean Wade's time in Cleveland should probably be over. I think that some of these end of the bench, or not end of the bench, but end of the rotation spots, are spots that you should probably be looking to change around a little bit and find guys that can fit a little bit better and can do what you need.
Can the Cavs win a title with it being a big three instead of a core four?
I do think so, because I think Evan Mobley can reach status as somebody that's a top 5 to 7 player in basketball. And if you have somebody like that, and you have a Donovan Mitchell, who just named first team all NBA, has been in Cleveland a top 10 player in the NBA since he got here. Mm-hmm. If you've got two of those guys and the rest of the roster is okay, you can figure that out. I do think so. I think that,
I mean, the NBA is so weird right now, because it just feels like it. First off, and we've had conversations about super teams and dynasties and all this other stuff. But the reality is that we've had 7 different champions in 7 different years. And every time you get a champion, they think that there's going to be some sort of dynasty. I thought Chris made a good point yesterday. He's like, with the Thunder, maybe they have one based off the idea that they have just such a cap friendly team. And they're going to hit some of the tax problems that some of these other teams run into. But, we've just seen way too many times. Giannis wins with the Bucks. Oh, the Bucks are going to be a dynasty. No, they're not. Denver with Jokic. Oh, it's going to be a dynasty. No, they're not. Like, we just see it too many times for me to be convinced that a team in the Thunder, or even a team in the East, definitely not the Pacers, but that we just have to lay down and die within this thing. Like, no. The Cavs have a golden opportunity, but they do have to find a way to get tougher in the postseason. They have to find a way to get better, and it's just not an easy answer out there. And it's a really hard thing. I think the other thing going against them, Danny, Kobe Altman is the architect of this. He's the one that put this all together. If you devise this team and put it together and you said, we're not changing it last year, I just have a hard time thinking like this is going to be the year after 64 wins that all of a sudden makes them be like, the light bulb went on. We can't do it with Darius and Donovan.
I don't think they believe they can't do it without Darius and Donovan.
No, I
don't think they should believe that can't be done.
Now, the problem, though, is that if you trade Jarrett, and then you run it back and it's Darius and it's Donovan and Mobley, if Darius gets injured, and now we've seen him get injured 2 times in the previous 2 postseasons, well, can Donovan and Mobley do damage in the postseason, just the two of them and everybody else? I'm sure they can do some damage, but are they making it their way to the finals?
It depends what Evan Mobley becomes.
Well, then that might be too fast.
That is the question, because if Evan Mobley is, and he was, listen, second team all NBA, and I have always been high on who Evan could be as a player. I started to get a little concerned that his offensive development wasn't coming along, and then he exploded offensively this year. Mm-hmm. I went from thinking that he was going to be somebody that he'll probably make a couple of all-NBA teams in his career. He'll be a finalist for Defensive Player of the Year before this year, and now I think he's somebody that is going to be a first-team all-NBA guy multiple times in his career. Like, that is what his career is going to amount to be. So if you have a guy like that, and you have Donovan Mitchell, anything is possible. I'm not saying that everything is likely, because winning a championship is incredibly difficult. That's why in the last 7 years, there have been seven different teams that have won it, because it is remarkably hard to do. But those two can do it. I don't have doubts about that. They need help. They can't do it alone. Is Darius Garland part of that equation? I think he can be. You're not asking him to go be your best player ever. But is Darius Garland good enough to be the third best player in a title team? Absolutely he is. Absolutely.
All right. 216-474-0092. Is it likely now with the Darius news that the Cavs just simply run it back with at least the three most important players on their team? 216-474-0092. Hit us up on Twitter. Twitter reactions brought to you by our friends over there at Chapman Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. We'll continue with this. Also, I got a complaint about the NBA finals that we'll have to get into as well. Daryl Ryder at 6 o'clock. It's Jonathan Peter and Danny Cunningham with you guys. Afternoon Drive right here on the Fan.
So you either are growing or you're dying, and most people don't think you're growing much with anybody else, so you want to see Shedeur Sanders and you want to see Dylan Gabriel. Mostly you want to see Shedeur Sanders. That's fine. That's fine. I can understand that. I like interest. I'm a carnival barker. I like trying to get people interested in things. I dig it. But just so you know, it's completely irresponsible. I agree with Daryl 100%. I made that argument at 7 o'clock. It's just irresponsible. I love Herm Edwards. Great guest. Was a very good NFL football coach. It's just irresponsible to say, yeah, you got those rookies. Play those rookies. No.
I don't think a coach, especially one that, you know, look at the odds. Look at the odds from the hot seat perspective. I don't think any coach is doing that. My whole point was, what if it's undeniable? Now, do I think it's going to be undeniable with Shedeur? Not really. I'm excited about him. I am. Kenny, I'm warming up. You know, we got 6 more weeks before training camp now. And I think, you know, you were getting eye rolls from me 3 weeks ago. All right, as we get closer, there will be some genuine excitement, especially when we get to see what he's made of, when guys are actually chasing him. See, that is what's going to get me really hot and bothered. That's the stuff that's going to be fun. And then come talk to me if he looks that good then. And if it looks leaps and bounds better than everybody else, then may start to change your perspective as well.
I'm going to get back to a different part of this coming up at 9 o'clock. Also, Cleveland actually might be too successful to bring this to their city, to our city. That coming up at 9:22 this morning. So I won't make any moves with the Cavs. I won't do it. Not right now. I haven't gotten anything that's realistic. There is stories being written now that do involve several teams and Kevin Durant. I still don't know how realistic that is. Now, my reasoning for it is because Matt Ishbia despises Dan Gilbert and isn't going to want to help out Dan
Gilbert.
I
won't do business with him and vice versa.
I don't want to besmirch Jordan Knott. I'm sure he's going to be a good basketball coach, but I wonder if that's half the reason they hired the guy, because the two guys that were finalists for the job were Cavs guys. So who the hell knows what's going on out there? I hear more from the Ishbias than I do anything else on the other side. So it seems that it might just be a one-sided argument there with those guys. Anyway, Kevin Durant, it's been conversations where teams have expressed interest courtesy of Shams Charania. Houston, San Antonio, Miami, Minnesota, New York. I think some other people have predicted that he will end up with the San Antonio Spurs by the time the new league year starts in the NBA. Anthony, Kevin Durant comes with his own set of issues, yep. Conversations. Oh, yeah. Some of them, I think, are a lot overblown. I used to be a guy who goes, man, this guy's nuts. Why are he's arguing with 14-year-olds on social media? I think he's nuts, but I think he's kind of nuts in a good way. I think of all the athletes who actually can handle it, there's only like 4, and he's one of them in the history of it. One of them is Mike Ditka, and Mike Ditka's dead. He could handle it. Wait a minute. Not Mike Ditka. He's alive. Dick Butkus.
Oh, he killed
do
poor
it on
Ditka.
Twitter.
Oh,
and
no.
And he's dead.
Oh, no.
Oh, God. I was like, that doesn't sound
poor
right. Mike Ditka's the coach.
He missed it.
You wouldn't make that mistake with Jerry Glanville.
Can I come back from that?
Yeah.
Because apparently I'm the bad boy.
That's
Dick
what he
Butkus
does.
Can't, but could I?
Can already sense coming in hot a theme. Here's the thing. Kevin Durant is turning, he'll be 37
yeah.
coming up in September. There has been zero drop-off in his game. Zero. Look at the numbers. It's actually staggering. You just don't know about it because he's been in Phoenix. And they've been terrible. And he's playing with another good player in Devin Booker, and yet they can't even crack the playoffs. So clearly, it didn't work there. He's getting traded. No, I don't think it's going to be to Cleveland. I could make a case for why it could work out.
Why is that?
Well, it's just...
His overall talent?
His shooting number. He just shot 43%.
Wait a minute. You just told me shooters weren't as important as they used to be.
This is a different guy. I mean, this is a guy who's done it in the playoffs. He's done it in the finals. He's outplayed LeBron in the finals. Like he has made some of the biggest shots during those NBA finals runs. Like, he's incredible. You can plop him into any lineup. He's going to give you that. I mean, no matter where he goes, he's going to be able to get, unlike some of the guys we've questioned whether or not they can actually step up in the playoffs. There's no questioning Kevin Durant. I mean, the guy is still a freak of nature. I just don't think with their second apron limitations, I just don't think there's any way they could actually make this work. They have to include multiple teams, and they can't do that because of the restrictions of the second apron. This is where the NBA might be making some of the offseason not as fun. Plus, then there's the Ishbia and Gilbert stuff. But make no mistake, like if you took out Darius Garland and plopped in Kevin Durant, yeah, I think we beat the Indiana Pacers last year. That's how good I think Kevin Durant still is.
I was laughing about something else. I'm sorry, because they're, you know, they hear it 30 seconds after I say it, and they're going, "Who died?" Mike Dick is still with us, everybody. I tend to agree with you. I think it's still a pie in the sky. You know, you and I had that conversation when Giannis first said, "It's like, okay, well, would you be willing to move on from Evan Mobley for Giannis Antetokounmpo? Okay, would you be willing to move on from Evan Mobley for Kevin Durant?" Is that a no? I would assume that's a no because he's 37
yeah.
years old.
Yeah, you're not
just making sure. I think it gets tougher and tougher. And so I keep coming back to the thought of, do you just want to get rid, not you, but everybody else. Do you just want to get rid of guys? Because it is such a major, major gamble. But I keep going back to this. You know, I know that there's been some consternation. I can't believe I'm going to say this. I hope people are recording it. I know what Chris had said over the weekend here on The Fan about Darius Garland has to go. And I know that there's been some people even within that organization kind of subtweeting him and things like that. You can't tell me he'd say that if he didn't know they weren't thinking of something. If they were totally, it is so easy in any professional sport to throw it out there, see where it sticks, and then turn right around and just say, no, the media runs with things and use the media as some sort of boogeyman, as a stupid boogeyman. I don't think he's saying these things, Chris is, without actually knowing something could be afoot, that there could be a possibility. I mean, it takes two or three to tango in this league, that something could possibly happen with him. I don't think he'd just say, well, he has to go for this thing to all fit and work out. Something sticks out there. A conversation starts with Darius. I know that there was earlier this week that the Kings would be interested in him. There was, I know they'd be interested in other teams and what could you get back. There's a very few guys that I would know right off the rip. You would go, this is a done deal. This team's better than Indiana. But this season is just messing with me emotionally. And I think it's messing with a lot of fans emotionally. Because you watch Indiana and I thought, man, I know we're better than Indiana. Now Indiana's up 2-1 in the series. Am I sure they're better than Indiana? Because you agreed with me a couple days ago, and now, hey, I'm listening to Afternoon Drive yesterday, and they're going, no, there's no way they could beat Indiana.
Anthony, do you trust that this Indiana team will be this Indiana team for the next 3 years?
No, I do not.
Like these players, right?
So, no, which is probably me sounding like everybody in Vegas who continually puts the Pacers as an underdog. They've only been favorites, I guess, in two of the games in the playoffs. Can you believe that, Kenny? They're two games away from championship. They've only been so nobody. Every game they win, it's like, yeah, but they're not going to do it again. And I've been part of it. Like I am. It's staggering to me what they are doing.
All of these role guys could just be on a heater. like an epic heater, right?
Month and a half.
We asked Tim Bontemps as the season was over, and then he kind of got into an argument with Lima about it. It was hot stuff. No, I think Indiana winning, I think, can fool us about who we are. I think it can fool us to the ear. You know, if Jason Tatum would have been healthy, do they get the Knicks? Does the matchup then go for the Boston Celtics, and then do the Celtics get there? Because nobody would be surprised if the Celtics were in the finals and up 2-1 against the Oklahoma City Thunder. Like, things in the postseason can change things. Jason Tatum, better player than Darius Garland, more powerful player than Darius Garland. But then I still arrive. If he's able to walk and run in games 1 and 2, is there a different outcome? Is there a different outcome in game 2? Do they not even make it a possibility that that Tyrese Halliburton can hit that shot in game 2? Because if you bring that back to 1-1, I think it might be a little bit different there. I don't know. It's all speculative on something I can't prove.
The reason Owen's asking me that question, I'm guessing, is because you're wondering, do you overreact to what the Pacers are doing and their run? Or do you pay attention to the 3 straight years that the Cavs have kind of underperformed in the playoffs?
I'm one that is ready to make some changes. I wanted to make changes last year, and we stayed the course and whatever. They changed the head coach. But at the same time, the team's not bad. They won 64 games.
Yes. Yeah, they're really good.
They're going to mature more, right? The only one that's old is Donovan Mitchell, and he's not old.
Yeah.
So do you stay the course? I worry that, I mean, guys that I never knew of 3 weeks ago, I don't believe that they're going to be the new face of the league. So why are we making huge adjustments to bring in? I know Kevin Durant's good at basketball. He's old.
Yeah,
he is old.
And I don't want to make a rash decision on a guy that's going to play here for a year or two.
All right, 216-474-0092. Does it take something to move mountains that you would make a move with any one of these guys in the core four? Coming in hot, coming up at 9:45, and your anger and cynicism are directed at the wrong guy. That's at 9:02 on The Fan.
There's no way the Cavs beat them if healthy.
Oh, I don't think so either. Look, going into the series, I thought it was going to be a close series between the two teams. I picked the Cavs to win in 6. I was thinking Cavs in 7.
We talked to you before that series got underway, and in just a sea of Cavs in 6, Cavs in 7, Cavs in 5, you're like, this is the one team the Cavs do not want to play.
Yeah.
Okay, there was something that you had you'd seen with this team that struck a little bit of fear when not many people had seen it.
It's really interesting, too, because a lot of us reporters talk amongst each other when we get into there for practice or shoot around or stuff. And I was in a heavy conversation with Danny Cunningham, actually, who covers the Cavs as well. And we were going back and forth on who the second best player in the series is, how long it was going to go. And I said, I don't know, Danny, like, this thing has 7 written all over it. He was like, there's no way Indiana takes the Cavs to 7.
Danny also last night said Oklahoma City in 5, and they were winning the next 4. So just want to make that abundantly clear.
So I just don't know that enough people gave Indiana the respect that it earned going into the series.
Vegas still hasn't, by the way. I want to just point that out. Like, Vegas, even during the series with the Cavs, where the Cavs were favored in every game, the Knicks were favored in every one of their games, and even up until, do you know the line for game 4? The
7.5?
6 points.
Okay.
Yeah, Thunder are favored by 6 points. Like, they still are not buying into everything that the Pacers are giving off. But go ahead.
I think it was your partner, Nick Wilson, who was saying that we were trying to sell a boxing match or something like that.
Sell the fight. Exactly right.
And I just don't think enough people gave Indy the kind of credit that they deserved. You know, since January, they've been one of the best teams in the entire NBA. This isn't new. So I felt like it was a competitive series going in, but I thought the Cavs were going to win because I thought they were the more talented team. I thought they had the best player, and I wasn't sure that Indiana's defense could get to the level that we've seen consistently throughout the course of these playoffs, especially against a Cavs offense that was one of the best in NBA history. But after seeing that series play out and seeing some of the matchup problems that Indy created for the Cavs, and seeing some of the lack of readiness from the Cavs' most important players compared to Indy's most important players, I don't know how you could watch that series and say injuries would have made the difference between winning that series and losing it. If you want to say making it more competitive, sure, totally get that. But winning that, beating Indy four times in seven tries? No, I don't think the Cavs fully healthy would have beaten this Indiana team four times in seven tries.
But I also think the thing going against Indiana right now is that, yes, they have a lot of good players that we know, but even like Halliburton was voted as overrated by his own peers. Siakam has never been given the due credit that I feel like Siakam has earned. And even a guy like Benedict Mathurin, who was obviously exceptional last night, next couple years, Mathurin's going to be a household name. Like he's that type of player.
Yes.
He's the type of guy that's only going to get better and better and has already showcased himself to be really, really good in the early parts of his career. And I just think we're going to look back on this Pacers team and we're going to think to ourselves, of course they won the title. Look how loaded this roster was. But it just kind of blindsided everyone and we didn't see it for what it was to begin with.
So if you take a step back and you try and take the emotion out of it, right? Pascal Siakam, not only was he a champion, he was the number two option on a championship team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's more ready for this than Evan Mobley is.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if we're talking about the second best player in the series behind Donovan Mitchell, you have to talk about Siakam, you have to talk about Tyrese Halliburton before you talk about anybody related to the Cavs, even when fully healthy. Because they've done it to a level that these guys have not shown.
I feel like now he's calling out Nick while not calling out Nick. Does that feel like that to you? You're not aware of Nick's take. I want you to become aware of it. Well, he told it to you on the air at one point. It was a very long time ago, so I don't expect you to have the memory attached to all of Nick's takes.
But it wasn't just Nick. It was the general conversation of if you get on a schoolyard and you start picking these guys.
I'm with you. That was part of the convo, though. And Nick has already owned up to this. He's repented for this one. He did like seven Hail Marys and our fathers. He's all good. I gave him the cross sign and everything. Like, we're cool. But at the time, we got in this knock him out, drag him out fight because he wanted to say that Darius Garland would go third in that race, 1-2-3, and it was all Cavs players, 1-2-3, and he was ahead of Tyrese Halliburton. And I said, you're bananas. So there's no way Tyrese Halliburton's fourth on this list, and we can debate talking about number two. But you know, it was one of those things that he didn't want to do. But that's I think locally, and we do this locally, we have a different viewpoint of these Cavs teams and these Cavs players than you know everybody else. And the Pacers, they've earned a lot of the credit that they're now getting.
I almost put Halliburton fifth on my MVP ballot, and everybody was yelling at me for it. But he is one of the most impactful players in the NBA. And I think that is something that Cavs fans need to take away from these playoffs. There is a difference between talent and impact. There is a difference between production and impact. Mm. Evan Mobley is never going to be defined by production, but he is an impactful player. We can all admit that because what he does at both ends of the floor, what he does on a possession-to-possession basis, especially on the defensive end. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
But we have to have an understanding of when it comes to Darius Garland, when it comes to Jared Allen, their level of impact in a playoff environment is not going to be what I think everybody in this town wants it to be. Darius is not going to impact games the way that Tyrese Halliburton does. Right. He's not going to dictate terms for a defense the way that Tyrese Halliburton does. He's not going to orchestrate offense the way that Tyrese Halliburton does. And like I said, you can't speed up Evan Mobley's clock. Just because he's really, really talented, just because he's second team All-NBA and a first time All-Star, you can't make him ready for playoff basketball because you want it to match the window of Donovan Mitchell or the timeline of Donovan Mitchell. He's just not ready to be what Pascal Siakam is for the Indiana Pacers right now. Just like Chet Holmgren is not ready right now. He might be in 3 to 5 years, and maybe Oklahoma City has enough around Shai Gilgeous-Alexander that makes it so the readiness of Chet Holmgren is not going to prevent them from winning a championship. Maybe, but the Cavs need Evan Mobley and Darius Garland to be more ready for playoff basketball and be more mature from a basketball standpoint than what they currently are. And until they get to that point, Kenny Atkinson was talking about it throughout the course of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Kobe Altman talked about it. Kenny Atkinson point blank said, we need Darius to be 28, not 25.
Yeah, he did.
He did.
He did.
Yeah. And he was talking about the mental side of the game. He was talking about basketball maturity. And Darius isn't there yet. And Evan Mobley's not there yet. and you can't speed up that clock.
Yeah, there's no way to microwave that process. Like, I keep trying to think of like what different things they could do to get him to that spot quicker. Because I do think part of the bet, if they run it back, is that Evan Mobley will have some sort of big drastic leap from 1 year to the next. But you're right, though. There's a, even outside of it, just his physical part, if it gets better and better, the mental side of it, it's still just, it's going to be lacking because he's not 28.
And here's the variable that nobody can predict. And this is part of the evaluation for the front office this offseason. Just how much going through all of these playoff failures and successes, how much is that going to make Evan more ready? How much better is that going to make Evan for playoff level basketball? Same thing when it comes to Darius. Same thing when it comes to Jared Allen. And I don't know how you predict that. Maybe going through all of this, maybe losing to Indiana in the fashion that the Cavs did, maybe that's going to make these guys better. Maybe losing 2 years ago against the New York Knicks, maybe losing last year in the conference semifinals to Boston. All of these lessons that they gained throughout the course of this journey together, it's going to make them better equipped for playoff basketball. Maybe.
And it might with Evan. The problem I have only with that conversation is the idea that Darius Garland fans would just come back and they'd be like, well, you know, mentally he's fine and he's there and this, that's not the part that's going to help him. He was injured the past 2 years. And they'll just try to use that as the excuse. And I think that's where we fall short in the Darius Garland conversation, because we're not acknowledging the idea that even if he's healthy, he still hasn't gotten to a spot that they need him to be.
So many people are focused on Darius's talent, and that is undeniable. Right? The spellbinding passes, the masterful dribble, the stop start, the just dynamic offensive player that he is. But there's another end of the floor that matters.
Yeah.
Especially when you get into a 7-game series and you start targeting certain weaknesses.
When you saw it last night, even with SGA, like what Indiana was able to do defensively on him, and then how it just impacted everyone else around that Thunder team. Yeah. Like, there's a reason why I said I thought the Pacers looked like a much better defensive team last night than the Thunder. Like, this stuff matters for these big time games.
And it doesn't matter what Indy does throughout the course of the regular season and what their regular season rating is on defense. It's middle of the pack, by the way.
Yeah.
So it's not terrible. It's not Washington Wizards or Charlotte Hornets. But it doesn't matter. All that matters is a 7-game series against a particular opponent. And when they have dudes like Andrew Nembhard and Aaron Nesmith and some of these, Ben Shepherd even, and TJ McConnell, some of these rugged defenders that can get in you and pressure you full court and take you out of your rhythm offensively, that's all that matters. And in a matchup, in a 7-game series matchup, those dudes are going to be tough to play against for years to come, provided they stay together, because they have multiple feisty on-ball defenders that can guard the likes of Darius Garland, that can guard the likes of Donovan Mitchell. And nobody is shutting down Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Nobody's shutting down Donovan Mitchell. But can you make it difficult? Yeah. Can you throw different bodies at that guy and wear him down over the course of a series? That's what they're doing.
That's what they're doing. And that's why in the fourth quarter, they missed 9 out of their last 10, the Thunder did. Like, in the most important part of the game, they went blank based off of what Indiana was able to offer up defensively. All right, 216-474-0092. A lot to get to. We do have Browns rookie running back Dalen Sampson joining us at 3:40. I did not tell you guys earlier, we'll have Herm Edwards on at 6 o'clock as well. So a lot to get into. Quick Hits comes your way next right here on The Fan.
Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan. Daryl Ryder joins us at 1 o'clock. We'll talk to our Browns beat reporter after camp has officially concluded for the Browns. Their mandatory mini camp is over. Dan, I just want to make sure that we have no more updates. Did we find out what was the main food in the concession line for the players today? I know they have like side places where they can get a peanut butter and jelly sandwich or whatever they want over there.
Oh,
but
Uncrustables.
Do we know what was the main course? Because if we didn't, we're not giving everyone every ounce and drip of information we can about the Browns. So do we know what the main course was there, or can we find out later?
I mean, it's camp, so it's got to be like bug juice and gruel, right? Isn't that how that typically works?
I think so.
Not at that one.
Summer camp. I mean, you got to have bug juice at summer camp.
It's got to be high grade bug juice.
Good food.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, good. All right, so we are up to speed on everything that happened at camp today, right? We've told everyone what's going on. Okay, good. I wanted to make sure. Let's go to the NBA now, Jeff. Shall we?
I don't think there's any question we shall.
How impressed are you with those Indiana Pacers?
No, more impressed than I was before.
Well, okay. How much more impressed then are you because of the NBA?
Not at all.
Do you think they could win?
Sure. Of course they could win.
Didn't you have Oklahoma City in 7, didn't you?
6 or 7.
Six or seven.
I have Indiana in six. I think I said seven.
And I had Indiana in six.
I hope the Pacers win. I like watching them play. I just do. They play the game the right way. They move the ball. They move bodies. A little more difficult against a pretty good Oklahoma City defense. And that's the only thing that I've kind of noticed here. Even last night when they had the great fourth quarter and came from behind and won the basketball game, Oklahoma's defense is really good. And it's a little bit more of a challenge, I think, for Indiana. But, boy, they've been terrific. Certainly the Oklahoma City defense giving Indiana a little more little tougher fight than the Cavs did, than the Knicks did, and they've still been able to win two out of the first three games. Good for them, and I think it looks like a series that's going to go six or seven.
How about that bench last night, especially in the fourth quarter for Indiana?
Benedict Mathurin,
yeah, and how
he was really good.
If you ask me, that's the difference in the game. That, you know, Indiana's bench was able to play through the pain, maybe is the best way to put it, because they were down. I mean, they came into that fourth quarter, they were down, but I don't know that any team, they're never out of the game because of their ability to come back. And, you know, 5-6 points seems like nothing for them. I mean, they've come back from, what, 19 down before in the playoffs? And for them to be able to come back and win that fourth quarter and win the way they did. I mean, not only did the offense sing with 32 points, but the defense was stifling in the end. And that when they were down and they were coming around, when they were losing and then they came back, the pickoff on the inbounds pass, oh, my God.
T.J. McCollum.
That was
really cool.
How awesome was that? That was like that's the play you want to show every kid.
That was like a line drive to third base that was on you so fast, and you just put your glove up, and it was there.
That is the definition of hustle, because he had come down, missed the shot, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody else got the rebound, made the shot, and he had to guard the inbounds play. And magnificent to be able to pick off the pass. Like I was like, what is going on here? That was such a great little series of events. And by the way, probably the game changer, right? That was a point in the game where it kind of pivoted towards the end.
That was just a really cool play. He had five steals last night. You know, see, that's, you're getting guys coming off their bench and having real impact. He did last night. Mathurin had last night. Other games, not as much, but, you know, still scrappy and out there. And the Cavs didn't have that as much, if you're looking for a comparison there. And it's something the Cavs are going to have to think about moving forward. But the way that Indiana plays is fascinating to me, because they play an old school style of basketball, and by old school I just mean there's no hero ball or very little of it, and nobody's taking 25 shots. They're spreading their scoring, they're spreading their shot attempts, and they move the ball and they move bodies. You're going up against the best defense in the NBA. You're moving the ball, moving bodies, and getting open shots. Golly, look what happens when you move the ball and you move bodies. You get good looks, as opposed to pound, 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 let me jack up a three.
The other part of the story not only was the bench, but was Tyrese Halliburton last night. Because there was I must have watched like three or four stories just on the series itself, and you're sitting there and you're like, oh, this thing's 1-1. What's going to happen? Halliburton's been, how would you describe his play in the first two? Average, like somewhere around there. And then, like, people were calling him out. And yeah, but he came back last night with 22, 11, and 9.
But see, here's the thing, though, Andy. Mm-hmm. The way they play, they don't need a guy to go get 25. They don't need a guy to go get 30. Halliburton can go play good basketball as the team's point guard and just play the game the right way. That, to me, that's one of the beauties of Indiana's style of play. All right, if you're the New York Knicks, Jalen Brunson has a bad night and scores 14, you're toast. You're toast most part.
But he also got
Donovan Mitchell has 14. You're in trouble.
Yeah.
Halliburton has 14? Well, good. He's a point guard. He passes the ball. He's supposed to do a lot of things, and he does.
But he had 17 in game two where they got rocked 123-107, and then people were killing him. He's got to do more. He's got to do this. Is he really this? Can he bounce back?
You know why people
all
are killing
the headlines
him?
And 17 points. He led the team in points.
You know why people are killing him? Because they're locked into hero ball. They're not locked into team basketball.
Good point. How does this thing play out from here?
Got me.
You think it's going to be more of the same close ball game, or do you? After watching last night's game even though Oklahoma City only scored limited points in the fourth quarter yesterday, I kind of feel like this thing's still going to go back down the wire. I really thought even in the fourth quarter Oklahoma City was going to win last night. I don't know why. I just kind of felt like
you've been that way all day when we've chatted.
Yeah,
about this.
And I didn't think that Indiana was going to. It's just like at some point. You're saying to yourself, was Indiana going to run out of gas here and not have any of that fourth quarter magic? And then, boom, what'd they do? They just played great defense, and they got timely scoring from different players, and they went out and they beat Oklahoma City down the stretch last night. Really, that's what they did. They beat them down the stretch. But they beat them with – and no one's going to sit here and think, oh, man, it was – well, maybe some people will, but some people are going to say, oh, it was that amazing defense. But, man, they only had 18 points. OKC only had 18 points. That's not going to happen again.
Why not?
An 18-point quarter for Why Oklahoma not? City? Because I expect more. And I think their fans do. And I think
Doesn't
if
matter.
You watch them enough, 18-point quarters just don't, especially in the playoffs, man. When you got to win.
Well, yeah, that's bad.
Yeah.
Give Indiana credit. Indiana came out and played a better fourth quarter. They were down 5 going into the fourth. Outscored them, what, 32-18? Well done. That's how you win basketball games. Mm. Play a little defense, shoot the ball well. Easy.
All right. What else have we noticed in this series that the Cavaliers can take out of this and say, okay, we can be a better team because we learned this here?
Oh, it's the same point I've always made. I can't stand hero ball. They didn't play it in the regular season, the Cavaliers. They spread it out a lot. They went hero ball. Before the series started with the Cavs, before the playoffs started, I said, I hope they don't revert back to having one guy take all kinds of shots, and they did. Might have been out of necessity, but all of a sudden it went back to what it was, and it didn't work. And so you're missing a guy. Doesn't mean you change your style of play. It means you continue to play the way that you won 64 games in the regular season.
I don't know if it's something specifically for the Cavs, but it's something that definitely has stood out to me. There's a home for the old school point guard, and that there's somebody out there who is playing old school point guard.
Are you talking about Halliburton?
Talking Halliburton.
Okay, yeah.
And the fact that everybody's sitting there going, oh, Halliburton's got to step up. He's got to score more. It's like,
I'm not wrong, right? Isn't that what we heard for the last 2 days? Halliburton's got to do this. He's got to get a lot better. Oh, my God. He's
not a superstar. He's a winning point guard.
Right. Because in the playoffs, he's been like 19 and 10, 19 points, 10 assists. It's the old argument we heard for years and years when it came to Steve Nash, and everybody would scream at Nash all the time for not shooting enough. When in reality, he was the old school point guard. He was setting everybody up. He was everything, every poking, every prodding, every shooting had something behind it. It wasn't just, I got to get my 20 up because I can make, 10 of them. It's the same thing with Halliburton, and I wonder if we see more and more people like that.
Good quarterbacks in the NFL don't win games by themselves. They have to have a lot of things working, and a good point guard is the same type of deal. You have to set guys up. You have to orchestrate. You have to run the offense. Does that sound familiar? That's what we're worried about with the Browns. Who can run the offense? Halliburton runs the offense, and man, his clutch shooting has been off the charts. He's been a delight to watch. But if you're looking for him to be Michael Jordan, well, that's not him. That's not what he does. If you're looking for him to be Donovan Mitchell, that's not what he does. He's not Jalen Brunson. He's a point guard. And he's 6'5".
That helps the cause, too.
It sure does.
I think that's my lesson out of this, is that people have said one of the flaws of this Cavalier team is that the two guards need the ball in their hands and they need to get their shots up. And that, I think, Jeff, it was you and I behind the scenes once, we're trying to sit back and figure out, is there an old school point guard left?
Yeah.
Or have they all turned into ball dominant? I got to score 20 a game. And we have an answer. There's at least one that we know of, and I'm watching them in the finals right now, and I wonder if it means we see more and more of them because we know how this is such a copycat league.
Mm-hmm.
From a Cavs perspective, if Indiana goes on to win, can you take any, I don't want to say pride, but that'll be 2 years in a row you got knocked out by the, if Indiana goes on to win, right? That you continue to take any learning experience to say, oh, we hit two brick walls along the way?
Nope.
No?
That does nothing for me. You know, and just think about this. This is not about Darius Garland, okay? It's not. Darius is a hell of a player.
Everybody wants to make it out.
But it's not about him. He's a hell of a player. He's really good. It's about the fit. Could you imagine if a guy like Halliburton was playing alongside Donovan Mitchell and Evan Mobley? Think about that.
I'll contemplate that. But before we do that, I've got to talk to Daryl Ryder because he's coming up next. Our Browns beat reporter, Daryl Ryder, gives us the lowdown as camp concludes in Berea. What will we find out next? Only Daryl knows. 216-474-0092. It's Baskin and Phelps.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.